Welcome to the Power Is Now online radio. It's a beautiful day in Southern California and a great day to talk about real estate. So thank you for joining us today. The phrase, the power is now, suggests that we maximize our potential for success in business and life. When we act on information and opportunities now, the present is our future because the future is only a reflection of past decisions to act now. We are at our best. We maximize our success when we act now. That's what the power is now all about, folks. Acting on information now. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. The Power Is Now Radio is a series of meetings designed to empower and inspire real estate agents to sell more homes, expand their business of buyers and sellers, to be well informed about changes in the world of real estate finance and marketing and economics and government and anything else that can help real estate agents be the very best they can be as real estate professionals. Please email info@thepowerisnow.com or you can contact us by telephone at 1-800-401-8994, extension 703. Let us know what you think about the teleconference and how the Power Is Now online radio can continue to support you in the real estate business. We really appreciate the feedback and the wonderful suggested topics I receive from time to time. And if you are listening to this call for the very first time, please, again, email me at info@thepowerisnow.com. Write in the subject line, add me to your mailing list, and we'll be sure to do so. Or you can go to our website. ThePowerIsNow.com. That's right, ThePowerIsNow.com. And join for free. And in doing so, you'll be able to listen on the Power Is Now website to all the past calls that we've had, great speakers and great subjects, and also on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's BlogTalkRadio.com/ThePowerIsNow. Well, last week we had Ted and Glenda Brass, Brass and Brass. They were selected to be Power Agents in the Power Agent Spotlight. That's right, the Power Agent Spotlight. We launched that program last week, and Ted and Glenda were the first to participate in it, and they did an incredible job telling their story and how they've been in the business not only for a very long time, but they've been very successful. They shared some of their strategies. And so I really encourage you to go to the Power Is Now website and listen to the Power Agent Spotlight every month. In fact, it's always going to be on a Thursday when our show normally occurs, but every third Thursday of the month, we will have a Power Agent Spotlight. And we will select an agent in the community that is willing to share their experiences and how they made it to the top. So look out for more Power Agent Spotlights coming to you real soon. Now, next week, in fact, starting next Tuesday, we will relaunch the 8-week series on communication by P.S. Perkins, The Communication Staircase. I'm really excited about relaunching that series. It's 8 weeks, folks, of power-packed information about communication. I highly encourage you to participate and listen to that call. It's going to be every Tuesday, starting next week, from 10:30 in the morning to about 12 o'clock. I recommend that you get your pencil and pad out and take notes. You're going to learn about the 7 types of communication on P.S. Perkins' Communication Staircase. Again, it's a great opportunity to improve your communication skills, and I certainly hope you will listen in, again, starting next Tuesday on the Power Is Now online radio. Folks, I'm really looking forward to a conversation we're going to have with Ryan Hennessy of Keystone Asset Management. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. June 13th, the Orange County Realty. going to be kicking off their Golf Classic, as well as the NARAP Region 15 Conference. So on June 13th, at the Bella Colima Town and Golf Club, we're having our first ever Golf Classic, and it's going to be an exciting event at a fabulous golf course. It's at Bella Colima Town and Golf Club, 200 Avenida La Plata, San Clemente, California. Registration is at 8 a.m., and the golf tournament begins at 9 a.m. in the morning. Lunch at 1 p.m., and awards and prizes will be at 2:30 p.m. For an individual golfer, only $150, twosomes, $300, foursomes, $600, and there's sponsorship opportunities available. Go to ocrealtors.org for more information and register to participate on this great Orange County Realtors Golf Classic. Following the Orange County Realtors Golf Classic is NARAP's Region 15 Conference. Communicate to dominate June 14th and June 15th at the Sheraton Park Hotel, 1855 South Harbor Boulevard in Anaheim, California. Drive your business to more profits and success. Region 15 Conference presents Communicate to Build Your Investor Business. Rev up your revenue source with property management. Add income from corporate and social services. Dominate with your brand and social media. Increase REO and short sale commissions, and many other topics. Dominate your market and register now. Just go to ocrealtors.org for more information. Standard registration to May 28th. Members, $199. Non-members, $300. Late registration, members, $235. Non-members, $350. Registration includes conference attendance, continental breakfast Thursday and Friday, three-course luncheon Thursday and Friday, three-course dinner Thursday, and entertainment and dancing. There will also be a talent show contest with prizes, and of course, the pre-conference golf tournament, which is Wednesday. Folks, the Region 15 Conference, Communicate to Dominate, is only 5 minutes from the happiest place on earth, Disneyland. That's right, it's going to be at the Sheraton Park Hotel, 1855 South Harbor Boulevard, Anaheim, California. Please come out and take advantage of this wonderful opportunity to learn how to build your investor business and rev up your revenue sources with property management and much more. Drive your business to more profits and success with the Communicate to Dominate NARAP Region 15 Conference. We hope to see you there. Talk to you soon. Okay, we're back. We certainly hope you take advantage of some of the wonderful opportunities that are happening here in Orange County with NARAP, Region 15 Conference, and also the Orange County Realtors Golf Tournament. certainly hope we'll see you there. For those of you who are just joining us, my name is Eric Frazier, and I'm the host of The Power Is Now. And today we're talking to Ryan Hennessy, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development at Keystone Asset Management. In the REO world, an agent's success depends on his or her ability to establish and maintain effective, long-standing relationships with asset managers. But with so many agents competing for the same professional attention, how can one set themselves apart from the crowd and establish a strong rapport with an asset manager? Well, this is why we're talking about asset management, how to rise above the pack as an REO broker, with Ryan Hennessy, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development. We're going to be talking about the approach to asset managers for the first time, how to make an impact, communicate to dominate in your marketplace, be accommodating and adaptable in an ever-changing environment, first-class marketing and industry engagement, and being accountable and committed to exceeding expectations. Now, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to address all of these talking points today, but we're certainly going to give it the old college try. So before we bring Ryan onto the stage, if you will, let me share a little bit about his background. He is the Vice President in Marketing and Business of Marketing and Business Development. He joined Keystone Asset Management in 2009, with prior years serving his internship in the vendor management, pre-marketing, and property valuations departments. Currently, as Vice President of Marketing and Business Development, Ryan is responsible for facilitating new business development and implementing new procedures in the ongoing development of existing client portfolios by working closely with operations, sales, information technology, and accounting teams. Additionally, Ryan oversees Keystone's vendor management department, ensuring industry compliance with partners as well as the marketing departments to properly align Keystone in the default industry. Ryan holds a Bachelor's of Science degree from Shippingburg University in Marketing and Business Management, and he can be found speaking and attending numerous industry conferences and trainings, and actively participates in recognized organizations such as ARIA, NAREP, and WINS. Thank you for joining us today, Ryan, on the Power Is Now online radio.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Well, Ryan, the pleasure is all mine. Truly it is. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. Just reading your background and your level of responsibility, clearly you are a very busy man. And so to take time out of your schedule to join us today, we consider it an honor and a privilege, really, to have you on the show. So thank you again. And I'm really impressed, Ryan, with your background. The fact that you are only 25 years of age and you are running this organization's marketing and business development is very impressive. Please share with us how you made that happen to rise so quickly to the top in your profession at such a young age.
Well, you know, after I graduated school, our senior vice president of operations, Tom Driver, was looking for some more stability in the vendor management department here. And I was a little unsure about what I wanted to do. Considering MBA, I've always been interested in being a professor and teaching. Quite honestly, if I didn't like business or didn't take a liking to business and the overall process, I would have ended up being some sort of math teacher or math professor. Numbers are kind of my thing. But Tom called me up, and he gave me an opportunity with some responsibility, and he's kept me close by his side ever since, working with the team here.
Well, that's great. So you started as an intern prior to 2009, or was that in 2009 that you joined him as an intern?
I started interning in between summer semesters at school at Shippensburg, and then I graduated in 2009 and took off for the remaining month of after the graduation, and then started up. I guess it's almost exactly, 3 years ago now, which means my review is probably soon, so I better behave on this call.
I'm sure you do fine. Have them call me. I'll put in a good word for you. So, Ryan, as a vendor manager, what is your primary responsibility? You're managing the vendor relationships. You're managing the agent network. What's the difference?
Well, just from a big picture standpoint, for those of you that are familiar with baseball, I like to consider myself a little bit of a utility player. because I have the fortunate responsibility or fortunate pleasure of touching a lot of things, probably because Tom doesn't trust me with just taking on one responsibility by myself. But that involves marketing, where we are, where we attend, and what we where we how we perceive ourselves within the industry. The business development side, working closely with Scott Keller and our sales team on new client relations and existing client relations, and making sure our performance is beyond satisfactory, similar to any business owner or broker that may be on this call. And then from a vendor management standpoint, you know, that's a big task and an ongoing process, I think, for anyone that has a diverse network of vendors, brokers, and overall industry partners. And vendors, you know, for the sake of vendor management, means several different things. That means our agent and broker network. That means the property preservation companies that we align ourselves with or that we're directed to by our clients, the closing and escrow and title firms that we partner with, the appraisers that we use. Essentially, anyone that that is not a client or an employee of Keystone's. And like I said, that's a pretty diverse task, but you know, I like to think that we're on top of it and drive the same integrity and performance that we expect of ourselves.
So how long has Keystone been around? And tell us a little bit about the leadership. You keep mentioning Tom. I assume this is the person you work for directly. Who is Tom, and when did Keystone Asset Management get started?
Keystone actually started in 1995, and I mentioned Tom because he's been around the industry several times. Tom is our Senior Vice President of Operations and, again, helped me get my start here by hitting the ground running. But Keystone started as a local company, local to the Philadelphia area, managing REOs and valuations, and slowly branched out. Again, this is in the mid-90s. Slowly branched out to provide valuations on a more broad scale, more geographical scale, and eventually turned into a nationwide valuation provider and REO provider. And there was just a growing need for outsourcing REO back in this time. This was, I guess, in the late 90s, where there was a severely less competition than we all face now. And Keystone was actually Fannie Mae's first outsourcer. We had some great talks with them in the early stages of Keystone and the overall outsourcing concept, and that's how Fannie Mae got their outsourcing started. So it's something that we're proud of here. We're based just north of Philly. All the employees are working out of here. We don't have any remote employees currently. But it's actually a very interesting area that we currently reside in. Back in the 90s, and early 2000s, this area just north of Philly was actually a big hub for the default servicing industry. Companies like Conti Mortgage, The Associates, GMAC, you know, unfortunate about their current situation, but they have a huge office here just about 4 or 5 miles from us. And City Mortgage at one point ran all their East Coast loss mitigation. So we have a tremendous employee pool. We're in a great location. Eric, we were talking earlier, we have a staff just under 90 folks, and we, just going back to kind of the overall starting point of Keystone, it kind of merged from a valuation company early on to shortly after becoming a nationwide provider of REO, and it just kind of grew from a local to a regional to a nationwide provider as the years went on.
Well, what a great history. In fact, I think it's something quite noteworthy that Keystone was the first outsourcer for Fannie Mae. That's something that should be very proud of. And all the other outsourcers, I don't know how many there are, probably at least between 15 to 20, I believe, of outsourcers of Fannie Mae. You guys were the very first one. So congratulations on that. So who is the CEO and president of the company?
CEO and president is Jane Hennessy.
Oh, okay. So the company is named after him. Or is that a she? Did you say
that's
Jane?
A she, Jane.
Jane Hennessy. Wow. Well, definitely would love to have her on the show in the near future here just to hear her story. This is definitely a success story. and to be a, then a woman-owned business then.
Correct.
On top of that, that's even more remarkable. So congratulations on first having the wisdom to work for a company like this during your intern, and then to be good enough to be, you know, brought in and put into management leadership. So awesome job, man. Your parents must be very proud of you being still a little wet behind the ears at 25.
You're not going to hesitate to bring that up a couple times, are you?
I can't help it, man.
Spoken out of jealousy. Spoken out of jealousy.
Well, you know, you might be right. I just celebrated a big 5-0, so I'm still in mourning. But anyway, moving past age, let's talk about the opportunity, because I know there's lots of people listening to the call right now, right? I think this is going to be another record call. Everybody is looking for business, and you know that's the million-dollar question. Where do they sign up? How do they become a broker? Do you have opportunity for, you know, agents to get involved with REOs at Keystone Asset Management?
Well, before we dive into that, I'm going to kind of take over as host. What happened to the Power Is Now question?
Oh, it's coming up. It's coming up.
Oh, it's coming up. Okay, maybe I'm jumping ahead. I told you I didn't look at the agenda yet.
I'm looking forward to your profound statement about what the Power Is Now means to you. Okay. But I want to get these kind of preliminary questions out of the way here that I know people want to know. And then we're going to talk about, for the assets you do have, how do you get, you know, the attention of Keystone and other companies like you for that business. So let's talk about the, you know, the million-dollar question. Is there an opportunity for them to sign up right now, or do you have to be a broker, or can you just be an agent?
Absolutely. There's an absolute opportunity to work with us. I think the overall vendor management side of things is an ongoing challenge that always needs to be evaluated, because the moment that you're giving business out of someone not continuing to earn it, whether that's from an agent's perspective, from an outsourcer perspective, or whatever, whatever have you, it really comes down to performance and making sure that you earn the spot that you have. So in that, we're constantly evaluating opportunities, constantly evaluating our markets. I have a solid report here that I can pull up any metro area and look at every performance metric on every agent that we have and make some business decisions that we need to do there. From an agent broker perspective, agent broker does not, you know, necessarily need to be one or the other. We work with agents, we work with brokers. It's, you know, as long as the responsibilities are delegated or monitored and managed, I'm happy with that. From an overall opportunity perspective, and I'm sure we'll dive into this a little bit later, we're anticipating the summer months of this year to be a little bit slower on the volume side. I'm sure a lot of folks on this call can attest to that. Regardless of the market you're in, new acquisitions seem to be a little bit down, and I expect that to be the case for the immediate months. So we're actually, and I'm actually taking this time to really strongly evaluate our agent network, to really strongly evaluate performance. In April, we went live with a new scorecard, just a revamped, some added some metrics, added some information on our end, and really driving performance that way and closely monitoring that in anticipation of making some business decisions, some for better, some for worse. And that's going to free up a lot of opportunity for some new folks as we see some volume increases in the late third quarter, fourth quarter of this year. The application process for Keystone is to log on to our website, which is KeystoneBest.com, KeystoneBest. And under Contact Us is an agent application. There's a little bit of a, I guess maybe a rumor that I like to refer to it, is that it's only good for 90 days. I like to consider that half true. We keep information in our system dating back to probably 2006-ish, 2007 when we went through an online application process. But we like to see updates every 90, 120 days. In the event that an agent changes companies, in the event that an agent opens their own brokerage, or there's a merger acquisition with another brokerage, it's our way of of being proactive and saying, hey, resubmit your application, resubmit your information. And internally, we have our team here that can map all that back to past applications using a couple confidence intervals, such as email, last name, general location, things like that.
Well, that's great. The information, everything's online, and you're able to maybe look and see where you have opportunity in the marketplace. You go to that site where everyone puts their information. Is there any type of due diligence that's done on the agents? Are you, are you requiring a certain years of experience before you'll give an agent an opportunity? And are there any particular markets where you have the greatest needs right now?
Actually, the experience is an interesting question because, you know, I think it's kind of, you know, experience versus non-experience to me is almost like, you know, there's pros to both sides and I'd like to speak on that for a second. The experienced folks have been around for a little while and they've probably dealt with every situation you could probably think of or at least something similar and have a good way to handle that. But I also like to argue that the inexperienced or the lesser experienced, I guess I should say, agents and brokers that are available in an ever-changing market, in an ever-changing game of new policies, new regulations, new procedures, new tasks, I think it's easier for someone that may be just getting into this or having less experience to adjust to those rather than someone who may be doing the same task the same way for 10-plus years. So from an experience standpoint, I think experience helps, but there's no minimum requirement on years of service, I guess, so to speak, because our procedures, whether it's on the same servicer as a different outsourcer, are going to be slightly different. So it's going to be a little bit of a training process on both ends.
Well, Ryan, you've just made a lot of people very happy who would like to get in, but perhaps thought they have missed that opportunity because they don't have all the certifications and all the experience doing REO. They would like to get in. And, you know, that's a question we definitely want to address a little bit later in the call here. Is it too late? You know, is it too late? I think for a company like yours who's totally vested in REO, that may not be your perception on things, but that's definitely a question I want to ask a little bit later in the show. Is it too late for people to get involved? Because if it's not too late and they don't have a whole lot of experience, Keystone Asset Management may be an opportunity for them. So what I want to do now is I want to go to a commercial break for a minute. But before we do, let's ask the question. Mr. Hennessy, what does the phrase, "the power is now," mean to you in the context of who you are as an industry professional, as a citizen of the world, I'm not sure if you're married or what have you, a father or a husband? What does "the power is now" mean to you today?
Well, being from Philly, the only thing I can really picture is Eric and myself running up the art museum stairs and jumping up and down like Rocky. And I would like to put in a disclaimer that you did disclose your age at turning the 5-0, so I'd like to think I can beat you up those stairs and jump in the air and seizing the opportunity. But the power is now. I think it really is it's a three-letter phrase that is very important. I think it really means seizing the opportunity, finding the opportunity, and capitalizing on it. And whether that's business, whether that's personal, whether that's just wanting to find a new hobby that you've always wanted to try, and you finally either get up the gumption or find the time to do it. I think it's all about seizing the opportunity to put yourself in a situation that makes you inevitably happy. Again, whether that's business, whether that's personal, what have you. But the opportunity to put yourself in a situation that truly makes you happy should never be put aside for anyone. And I think the more folks that can wake up in the morning and be truly happy with who they're with or where they are or what they're going to do that day are ultimately going to find the best success and the best results. And that comes down to the power is now, meaning it's today, let's seize the opportunity and let's make ourselves happy and let's make ourselves successful.
Well, Ryan, that is a great segue to our subject, how to rise to the top, you know, how to be the best you can be, how to get the attention of asset managers, and I'm looking forward to that because I think when we don't do the things we know we have to do today, it does kind of sets us back a little bit. You know, I think we disappoint ourselves when we're not acting in our power, doing things now, and that is pursuing happiness in our relationships, pursuing happiness in our business. And so, but that's a great step. That's a great statement. Great power is now statement. Thank you so much. And folks, hang in there with us. We're going to take a break for a second and share some information about what's happening here locally in Orange County. And we'll be right back with Ryan Hennessy. All right, we're back with Ryan Hennessy with Keystone Asset Management, and I appreciate Ryan taking the time out. I appreciate his youth and his wisdom that he's gained in such a short period of time being in the business, and I think that Miss Hennessy, Jane Hennessy, has done a great job in selecting great people. You know, the saying in business, you're only as good as your people, and clearly, Ryan, you are representing Keystone well. So let's talk about our subject today, and I am looking forward to hearing, you know, your thoughts on this. And of course, folks, if you are on Blog Talk Radio, and quite a few of you are on Blog Talk Radio, if you want to ask a question of Ryan, all you have to do is, I believe, press 1 on your keypad, and then I will come on the line. I'll bring you on the line, and I want to state your name and the state you're calling from, and then ask your question. So if you want to ask Ryan a question, just press 1, and then I will come on the line and introduce you to Ryan. So, Ryan, let's start with our subject, how to rise above the pack as an REO broker agent. And, you know, interesting subject because of what's going on in the industry today, and maybe we can, you know, take a top-down approach here. What's happening in the industry is a lack of inventory and a lot of changes going on. But yes, there are people who are totally invested in doing REO. They have staff, they have offices, what have you, just like Keystone is totally invested. You know, how do they rise above the pack to do business with Keystone or any other asset management company?
Well, it's absolutely a challenge when it all seems like we're chasing the same file or the same property, and it really comes down to how you can position yourself within the industry and within your own individual market. And I think the biggest tool that we can all use is really focusing on our business and determining what your value add is, determining what it is that you bring to the table that's extremely unique and that's extremely different, that can provide solutions to the overall neighborhood and the overall market. I think just from an overall perspective, days on market statistics and some things like that are extremely important. But I think when marketing yourself and when trying to approach asset managers and trying to stay above, it really comes down to some of the intangible things that we all require of each other, and that's communication. That's any special programs or practices you have set up in your staff. From our standpoint, we're working on several unique partnerships, aligning ourselves very uniquely in the industry to bring additional value to our services, because you know, at the end of the day, there's quite a few outsourcers, and a lot of servicers have their own direct or internal REO departments and default practices. So it really comes down to us doing the same thing too. What can we do differently? What can we do uniquely to remain an interesting option and remain a successful solution to our clients and to our business partners and market partners as a whole? I think from a servicer standpoint, there's an extremely large push to obtain homeowner occupant buyers and an overall push to stabilize neighborhoods. And I know, and I'm sure I can speak on most of the agents' behalf, in that most of the markets are seeing a lot of multiple offer situations that are driving the asset prices up, almost giving a phantom market or false implication that housing prices are going up based off the backlog of inventory. But we're in a situation where the demand is way higher than the supply right now of bank-owned and foreclosed assets. So with investors willing to pay a little bit more, with additional capital, whether it's coming from overseas or not, how do we still provide the opportunity to market to homeowner buyers that are going to live and invest in those communities? And that's an extremely strong push. I actually heard we had a new business associate, a new business friend on the lending side of Bank of America, the National Renovation Lending Manager, in our office yesterday. And he spoke to our staff, and we had a sidebar conversation with him. And based off the definition of an investor, and you'll have to forgive me the way that he determined that definition, but investors only make up 3 to 6% of the buyer pool. Pretty much the remainder would come down to your families and your homeowner occupants. So with half the properties being sold cash or being sold to investors, how do we tap into that remaining large buyer pool and bring some opportunities out to them? And that's just one example of creating a value add, creating a unique program or unique opportunity for yourself, for the market, that should absolutely be presented to potential clients and existing clients.
Well, Ron, you make some very interesting points, and I want to just explore that a little bit. In the past, you know, it has been the experience and the capabilities of an REO broker that position them, him or her, to get the business. You know, they have all these departments, they have a large staff, they've got every certification in the world, and they're able to, you know, quickly take care of the properties. They have money in the bank, they can front the cost and all these things. But from what you're telling me now, with demand being high and inventory low, it's not very difficult to sell an REO. And so you're looking for, with a stronger value proposition, is someone who has a pool of buyers. And this leads me to believe then that agent out there who is maybe does not have a lot of REO experience, but is an experienced retail buyer's agent, has a pool of buyers that they're working with every day, this person has a pretty strong value proposition to you, would you say?
Yeah, now there's always you're going to need REO experience because it's tremendously different than a traditional retail sale. You're essentially half property manager, half REO agent, or half real estate agent, because there's a lot you have to address and manage, utilities, depending on the client, preservation, HOA, some things like that. But I think there's three major, and again, this is my opinion, but I think there's three major components that can make someone really stick out. That is the overall marketing of the assets. Like I mentioned earlier, with homeowner buyers or, you know, whatever the case, the market or the neighborhood will bring, marketing your assets and the creativeness and the uniqueness of that can never be underestimated, because an agent is essentially licensed to sell properties. Or represent a potential buyer. So how an agent can uniquely market their assets and creatively reach buyers, whether that is an investor, whether that is a homeowner occupant, is extremely important. Number two of the three, how an agent is set up to deal with title concerns, HOA concerns. That's a growing issue, and I can tell you that's honestly a growing headache for our clients. Some states like Florida, you're in a no-win situation, and we all do our best to negotiate and work around, but you know there's clear room for improvement on our end, on an agent's end, on a servicer's end in their practice. So how are we dealing with potential liens, violations, and some unique situations there that involve the home ownership associations? And then number three comes down to staff and training. There's a lot of tremendous training opportunities out there. The one that first comes to mind, and I'm sure for those of you that are on the line know this man or heard of this man, Bubba Mills and the Corcoran Training Group. They hold boot camps that are tremendous. I've had the opportunity to speak at those events, and there's one upcoming next month that I'll be there for. But a lot of folks go to these events, and whether it's Bubba's trainings, whether it's five-star certifications, or other programs that exist, the face of the organization, the agent may go to that, but we all know that part of an agent or a business owner's job is to do some business development. So they obtain all this information, but very little is shared to the staff. Very little is implemented. Very little is disclosed to the staff. And I think that is extremely, extremely important to bring your staff in and align your staff with goals or align your staff with metrics to monitor their evaluations to drive performance. We're given performance criteria by our clients, and all of our staff members, our asset managers, our pre-marketers, our closers, our title specialists, are incented with metrics that align right with our client metrics, because that's how we drive performance. And they're all given monthly and quarterly scorecards, just like our agents, who also have similar goals and expectations. So I think relaying that responsibility and training your staff and keeping them involved is extremely important. So those three items, the training your staff, dealing with HOAs and the different arising headaches that can evolve there, and then the overall marketing of the assets are the three things that I like to look for. Outside of the standard, performance KPI metrics.
Right. Well, it does seem like then you have to have a full package then. So a person who perhaps has been fully committed to just REO business, they are well positioned then to take those skills they already have, and having a very strong staff, well trained, being strong property managers, being able to resolve issues with liens and titles and violations. Now they perhaps need to look at really expanding the retail side and being stronger in the marketing and and working or attracting buyers, building a pool of buyers to be able to put homeowners and properties, our investors, and truly take their game to another level and be even more attractive than what perhaps they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that one of the challenges I think that people have, though, is trying to communicate those value propositions. They don't have very much time. When they meet an asset manager at a conference or they get an opportunity, like even on this conference call, there will be people who will ask questions or want to schedule time to meet with you, but there's not a whole lot of time to share, the value proposition that they bring. And that's really what our show is about today, is how to stand out. And we've got a number of bullet points here that I want to have you share with us what your thoughts are on this. And that is, when you're at these conferences, and you attend a lot of conferences, how does an agent make a meaningful introduction? How do they make an impact when approaching asset managers or vendor managers for the first time?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's extremely important to treat asset managers and potential clients, whether that is in this industry or it's something totally unique, as a person as opposed to a business opportunity? And what I mean by that is, if someone comes up to me and asks me, my two favorite things in the world are my guitars and hockey. It's totally off subject, but we'll get there. Hold on. I play guitar for a couple years. I love music, and I played hockey since I was a little kid, and I still do. A little sore from a game last night, actually. But my point in all this is, I will be more inclined to speak with someone that comes up to me knowing that we're going to talk business, knowing that we're going to talk about opportunity, but shows a genuine interest in getting to know me or something about me and maybe find a mutual common interest, because I guarantee you I will be more willing to, or not more willing, but I will remember that person a lot more than I will someone that just comes up and asks about an opportunity in the market, because that's a rather popular question these days. I think it's important to also, when approaching new asset managers, whether it's in person or through email or however, to understand the aches and pains of the asset managers. And you may be asking the question, well, I've never met this person. How do I know what their aches and pains are? Well, feel free to ask them, or ask other asset managers that you work with what their aches and pains are. And, because I'm more than willing to bet that our aches and pains of our asset managers and our pre-marketers and other key staff are fairly similar to the aches and pains of some of our business associates and competitors in this industry. Again, whether that's directly with servicers or other outsourcers, we're all facing the same challenges. We're all facing the same concerns. So, understanding the aches and pains and really marketing a solution to those aches and pains is extremely, extremely important. And that's the mentality that we take on our end. Get to know our clients, get to know their portfolios, and then we will sell ourselves. But we want to get to know the folks and know what their struggles are and know what they're looking for before we go into selling what it is that we can do for them. Because unless I know those questions, I don't, I'm just kind of going in blindfolded.
Right. Well, it sounds like what may be known by some as relationship selling. You're going in and you are establishing rapport and really getting to know the person, finding out something personal about the person. And that can actually be a little awkward, too, because the person on the receiving end of this conversation has to be kind of willing to open up. I know when I first met you, you're kind of gregarious and outgoing, and it's easy to talk to you and to talk about things other than business. But you say that's the typical attitude, the disposition of asset managers at these conferences.
Some folks might be a little more focused on the subject at hand, or the subject of why everyone's gathered, which would most likely be default servicing. So if it is a little difficult to really dive into a personal relationship, relationship's a broad enough word that it can just be focused around business. But I feel like if for 99 people out of 100, if you ask them, what their struggles are, what their frustrations are, that's not too personal of a question. I feel like more people than not would open up to that.
So, Ryan, what's been the best line you've ever heard to kind of open up that personal door for communication? What's been the best approach you've ever experienced in working with people and, being at conferences?
Oh, well, actually, there's one. A good friend of mine, Dave, an agent out in L.A., he was at the very first five-star I was at, and I was a little overwhelmed. I had already met him before, very good guy. And he was just telling me some stories, and as a joke, I forget what year it was, probably 2009 in the exhibit hall, he went up to Fannie Mae's booth and with a straight face asked the representative there what time Fannie Mae will be there and if he could meet her. And he was totally serious about it, knowing that Fannie Mae is not necessarily a person. But it was a great icebreaker. He had already worked with currently works with Fannie. I believe, and knew the whole process and everything, but it was a great icebreaker to start some conversation and to just kind of, hey, obviously I'm kidding, but here's a little joke, you know, and that has stuck out in my mind since I just mentioned it.
Well, you know, jokes are always great icebreakers, and I mean, who doesn't like a great joke? So, but here's what I want to do now on this first point, about approaching asset managers first time. I want to now equip the Power Is Now audience and just give them some details here. So, what type of guitar do you like playing? Are you electric, acoustic? What's going on there?
Well, I'm a Fender Stratocaster player. Clapton, Eric Clapton's pretty much my idol, and if I could be someone for a day, I'd absolutely love to be him. But I love acoustic. I was actually with one of my good friends down in Fort Myers, one of the first times I actually have traveled in the last 3 years that hasn't been business, and we pretty much relaxed and just played acoustic guitars for a weekend and had a blast. So any type of music, I'll listen to.
Now, I take it you're not a Kings fan, because it looks like they might win the national championship. Is that right?
Well, they won the first game of seven last night, but I will say I'm rooting for the Kings. I really don't like the Devils. They're kind of our rivalry here in Philly. Plus, there's a lot of ex-Flyers throughout the Kings organization. Their assistant head coach was our head coach a couple years ago. A lot of players have moved on out there. So I guess I'll root for the Kings. They seem to be the favorite, and I really just don't like New Jersey Devils.
Well, there you have it, folks. Acoustic guitar, Eric Clapton. And do you write songs and music, or are you just playing cover songs? What do you do with the music?
I've written a couple songs, but if you really want to hear them, you're probably going to have to give me a couple beers.
Okay, we'll make arrangements for that. What's your favorite beer? So what's your favorite beer?
Oh, actually, this Friday starts Philly Beer Week out here, and it starts with the first tapping of the keg by the mayor Friday evening, and then from there, because Philly is it's almost like San Diego. It's a big hub for microbreweries. There's a lot of this is actually probably as serious as you'll get me to talk. Now I sound really serious and focused now that we're talking about beer, but. It's pretty much a week and a half of different microbrews and brewmasters coming to the different bars and the different establishments in the area here in Philly and just showing their product and being available to speak, and it's a great time, I'm not going to lie.
Well, geez, have a great time. This starts this week. Next week, you say? Next week?
This Friday is the first tapping, and then it'll be probably for the next week and a half, yeah.
All right. Well, folks, we're learning a lot about Ryan, and again, this is really the first step in trying to rise above the pack as an REO broker, and that's having a meaningful introduction to approaching an asset manager for the first time, making an impact. And one way of doing that is by getting to know them and getting to know their likes and dislikes. And then, Ryan, you said something very important, understanding what their issues might be, what their challenges are, and being able to provide a solution or offer a solution on how you might be able to improve things. So I think that's great information. Let's look at number two, communicate to dominate in your marketplace. And, I know that the typical asset managers, what is your typical asset manager handling in terms of the number of files that they're handling? They've got to be busy. So communication is probably very important.
Yeah, usually I'd say an asset manager is carrying probably approximately 170 to 180 files per. That doesn't necessarily mean those are the amount listed. That's what's usually in their portfolio. I'd say what would be available would probably be closer to the lower hundreds, maybe 110, 130, somewhere in between that range. So, in monitoring the offers, the listing reductions, the marketing strategies, And the overall negotiation process, it is a rather busy position, and a heavy responsibility to be an asset manager. A lot of multitasking and being aware of issues, whether that's, you know, property specific or state specific or client specific. So I think effective communication is extremely, extremely important. And to showcase how important that is, our scorecard set up to be a little different for agents. Our asset managers, and actually each staff member, is required to evaluate our agents through different strategic spots of the liquidation process. So, for example, once an asset manager flips a property to under contract, that triggers the closer to jump in and start their follow-up, start their process, and overall tracking of the asset and working with the escrow company. Well, once the asset manager flips that status, they're required to complete an agent evaluation on the subjective material that you can't necessarily put a statistic to. And one of those points is effective communication. If there is an issue, if there is a concern at the property, were we made aware of it? And if we were we presented with different solutions or different opportunities to rectify the potential issue?
Communication is very important, and it's important just about every aspect of life. What is some of the examples you've seen where communication failure has led to perhaps a loss for Keystone Asset Management or a broker losing their account with Keystone?
Well, I think following the proper escalation policy is huge. We've had some agents go right to our clients and with concerns. And the problem with that is, I respect any relationship that people have with any direct side of a servicer, and that actually plays into our favor a lot as well. But oftentimes, those folks may not be involved in the outsourcing platform or are certainly not involved in that specific file. So that just causes a lot of due diligence on both parties, and following proper escalation policies is extremely important should there be any concerns. But I think from an extreme example, we were notified. This was probably, again, around 2009, a property we had out in Arizona. We were notified by our property preservation vendor, who was there doing some routine maintenance, that the property had recent severe fire damage, and the police department the fire department was called and put out a fire and helped stabilize that. And when we spoke to the agent didn't know, and that was not a fun situation. It was probably less fun for the agent than it was for us, based off what happened. But I feel like communication is the overall key. For example, if a house is broken into and some items go missing, were we notified of that, or were we notified by the agent saying, "Hey, it was an emergency health and safety issue. The asset has been secured. I have a police report of some of the items that were missing. What can I do? What else do I need to do?" Something to that effect. You know, it's just presenting solutions or resolutions to any potential concern or issue is absolutely key, because the agent, again, is the expert in that local market. And we have some limited authority to make some decisions, but we also need to be presented with some key viable solutions should we run into a problem.
So are the agents, do they have a certain amount of authority to spend money before when something happens without the concern of not being reimbursed, or do you have provisions around that? But sometimes, the ability to act now or later is a financial decision.
That's a tough question to ask, because that's really something that comes down to the servicer's guidelines and requirements. And it even varies for us, for clients, and how much we have authority to do. What I will say is, if there is a concern with the integrity of the asset being jeopardized, raise that immediately and see what we can do with solutions to address that immediately. For instance, if there's a hole in the roof, How can we fix that immediately, escalate that immediately, and we'll work on the overall repair later, but can we just tarp it right now just to prevent any further damage to the asset? And I feel like that, you know, that's a quick, easy decision an asset manager can make without having to get too much approval from any client.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, the fact that, you know, it depends on the investor. You are, how many different banks, you know, financial institutions are you guys managing assets for? You've got to have, there must be just lots of rules and requirements that you're having to manage.
Yeah, we're managing about 12 to 14 different institutions or different individual portfolios, and it even breaks down to one of our clients is a mortgage company that has about seven different investors, and sometimes those seven different investors have unique ways of doing things, which causes a little frustration on our end, but that's where we really rely on our technology to have everything set up so we have everything clearly defined behind the scenes of what allowables, what practices we have set in place, and that helps us tremendously. But you're absolutely right. Monitoring each client and their uniqueness is an ongoing challenge, and you mentioned that when you were introducing to me. One of my responsibilities is to implement a lot of new policies within existing clients on how we can be a little bit more efficient with their practices. And we have our team set up on a client basis as opposed to maybe state or region. So our asset managers are assigned to certain client portfolios so they can have a good understanding of allowables, approval limits, and overall authoritative responsibility. As opposed to just being assigned to maybe, let's just say, Florida with all 12 different clients when you could really run into some complicated scenarios.
Well, this puts a burden on the agent, and that leads us to, you know, bullet point number three, you know, be accommodating and adaptable to an ever-changing environment. Agents, in order to rise above the pack, they need to be pretty accommodating, don't they, when an asset manager kind of flips the script on them. And sends them in a whole different direction.
Absolutely. Here we are in the end of May. What may be good through the end of this month might not even apply or be acceptable tomorrow once we start June. And we're aware of that too. We run into that situation quite often. So again, I really feel like that's where we all can do that and a little bit better. And by we all, I mean I think there's obviously room for improvement on our end to help make some policies more clear, and we're striving to do that as best that we can with as much understanding of them that we have. But I think from an agent's perspective, where we can see some improvement or again some marketing to make yourself stand out is how are you taking those policies and holding your staff accountable for them? Because I would honestly be more than willing to bet that for a lot of agents that are managing multiple accounts, they have a great staff in place that handle the invoicing, that handle some quality assurance, that handle some offer acceptance and working with buyer's agents, because the team leader or the agent themselves are doing a lot of business development and networking. So how can we train the staff that might do, you know, 70%+ of the tasking to make sure that they're in compliance with each procedure and process?
Well, you're only as good as your people, and having a well-trained staff will minimize risk and help you keep your scorecard high. You know, I definitely want to explore that scorecard and what agents can do. You know, what are the areas, is it, 10 points, 5 points, 4 points that an agent is being graded on, and what particular area is having the greatest negative impact on an agent's score right now as you guys are assessing your network?
Sure. Our scorecard is built out into five sections, essentially.
Okay.
The first section carrying the most weight by a probably about half your scorecard, actually just about half your scorecard, is the REO statistical metrics. Your your turnaround times, your overall execution, which would be your initial BPO value to the final sale price, days on market, and some major statistics there that you'd find common throughout the standard scorecards. The second component would be the subjective data, which also has a large weight put on it, which is how our staff essentially values the working relationship with each individual partner. And what I mean by that is that's where we're evaluating our staff on how well did the agent communicate? Were they proactive? Were they or their team accessible when we were trying to solve issues? Some things like that really you can't pinpoint a statistic that would necessarily capture that. The third category would be accounting and just the overall timeliness of the accounting process. I know it's been a strong push recently, and for those that do work with us, they've received recent communication on this, for our clients to have invoices to them in a very short amount of time. And there's several reasons for this, most notably being they're reporting to a lot of investors who want to close their books and regulate their books as soon as possible, and they need those invoices and costs noted right away, and essentially those losses noted right away. So as soon as we receive an invoice, it's reviewed and passed along immediately so the servicer can pass that to their investor. So we're kind of playing whisper down the lane. But invoicing is extremely important in its own graded criteria on our end. The fourth is the vendor management category. And that's a simple compliance on making sure your information is updated in our system, making sure we have the correct contact information and licensing and insurance information that we have, if it expires, is updated with the supporting documents in an efficient time frame. And then the fifth, which is most notably surrounding one policy that Bank of America has, in the non-public information policy, is our overall clients, overall client compliance section. And it's not really a section that you can earn points with. It's a section that you can lose points with. And what I mean by that is for every violation that we find or every serious violation that we have, again, whether it's Bank of America or other clear client compliance items, contract addendums, things like that, we have the ability to penalize agents based on the seriousness of that compliance concern. And that's a tough part, and that's where really training your team can avoid those violations, because our scorecard is set up rather unique, so any points that are taken away can severely hinder your overall ranking. Our scorecard is out of 100 points, but we don't evaluate out of 100. We evaluate their agent score with their immediate market. So, for instance, in Philadelphia, my score is irrelevant to a lot of things except for the Philly market. I'm facing the same the changes and challenges in the Philadelphia area. And, I would say our average score is probably between 65 and 70 points out of 100. Wow. Which I know is still passing if you're talking about school. But, again, if I'm at a 65 but my market average is only a 60, well, then I'm showing in a great status. So that's how we monitor our agent's performance.
So you're grading on a curve, so to speak.
Exactly. It's all on a percentage interval. So if I'm at a 75 points and my area average is 50, well, what I do is I calculate that percentage. So I take 75 divided by 50, and I'm in the 150th percentile of that market area, which is outstanding. Anything you want to be above and beyond that market metro average.
Oh, that's really good to know. So, initially I'm thinking, geez, 65 or 70 out of 100, that person's going to lose their spot. At what point do you take action against an agent whose score is in the – well, what percentile do they need to be, in order to be removed from the list?
Well, again, that's market specific, because it's hard to, let's just say, you know, you're monitoring two markets and you want the bottom 15% you know, removed. Well, some markets might have a handful of agents, some might not. So again, we're looking at a lot of percentages of the markets. And I would say on an average, 15 to 20%, for those that are not performing, I'd like to put them in a status where we can monitor their performance more tightly. We can really evaluate what they have and make sure that increases. And if we can't train each other up to increase performance, then we can both seek other opportunities. But that's my overall goal. Easier said than done.
Yeah, no, I understand. So, Ryan, we have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit less than that, and I want to make sure before I ask a few more questions here to close out the show that our audience members have an opportunity to ask you a question. So if you want to ask Mike a question, I mean Ryan, please press 1, and we'll bring you on the line to ask a question. We're going to be wrapping up in just a few more minutes here, so again, press 1, and we'll bring you on to ask Ryan Hennessy a question. Ryan, this has been great information so far, and I want to get back to some of those key questions that I know agents want to know, and that is, where is your opportunity right now? Is there opportunity, is there a particular market? This call is nationwide. We have listeners everywhere. Is there a particular market where you absolutely need agents, or are you completely kind of at capacity across the board?
Well, we are, what I will say is we're busiest in a lot of the markets where you're seeing more inventory inflow. States like California, although we can speak on that, that's going to be a little slower in the near future. But states like California, Texas, Georgia, Florida, they're all busy states for us. We're fortunate enough to have clients with national portfolios where we do acquire assets nationwide. Based off the size of our database, I will say most of the markets are sufficiently met as far as needs are concerned. But again, what I will say is for those that have been listening, and I've made this point to a lot of people, and very few follow up, in that of the things that we talked about today, if that information can be passed along to me, on how you run your business, how you operate, marketing to, I feel like I've expressed some aches and pains and some how to obtain or capitalize on opportunities. If some information can be passed along to me, I will not shy away in giving someone an opportunity, because that's really what's important to me and how I feel like I can drive performance on my end better for our clients.
Right. How important is diversity, you know, in your agent network, you know, women versus men, minorities versus non-minorities, you know, how do you track that to ensure that there's, you know, fairness and parity?
Oh, it's absolutely important, and we know that being a women business enterprise that is very important, especially if you look at, for instance, some parts of Florida. It's very Hispanically populated in some areas. So having an agent that understands the different cultures, that can speak the different languages, that can relate to maybe the tenant that is renting the property that is not fully aware of the current situation that they're in, it's extremely important to know your market, to know your demographic, and to have a diverse network. And that, again, creates additional opportunity as well, being more in touch and more educated with your staff. And whether, you know, if we're using that same example, you might not speak Spanish, but your field runner and the person that does your occupancy checks and negotiations has a very good bilingual capability, then that's extremely important, and that's, again, a value add if that's the demographic of the market. So, you know, having a diverse network, and diversity doesn't just necessarily mean, you know, male versus female or ethnicity, but just overall having a diverse collection of uniqueness and talents obviously just enhances the success of at least Keystone here.
Now, are there any particular certifications that Keystone looks at that might help an agent stand out?
Well, I think being part of NAREP, ARIA, WINS, the different organizations there is important because it shows a commitment and involvement in the industry. There's a lot of good information, a lot of good organizations out there that are really focused on sharing and education. From a certification training standpoint, again, we mentioned Five Star and Bubba's training camps and things like that. I think they're extremely, extremely valuable so long as the effort that you're expecting to get out of it matches the effort you're willing to put into it. So there's a lot of on-site trainings or there's a lot of trainings at these conferences, and economically that's not feasible for one person to go to all of these. So capitalizing on what's most beneficial for you. Is it an online training program? Is it going to this particular event? But it's only going to be worth what you take out of it and implement.
Well, that's great news, and I'm glad to hear you endorse and support the Minority Trade Associations. Now, in fact, in reading your bio, I noticed that the NAREP, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, Realtors, wasn't in that list. Was that just a typo, or are you affiliated, or do you participate with NAREP?
Keystone, I believe, has affiliated with them. I don't know if I've had the pleasure of speaking or being personally a part of that to this day.
Well, I will make sure that someone from our national office gets in contact with you. We have a national convention coming up in August, and we have a regional conference coming in up, which I just announced earlier, here in California on June 14th and 15th, and it would be great. I don't know if there's enough notice, but it'd be great if you could come down and meet the agents that comprise of Region 15, which I believe is California, Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon. So it's going to be a great conference and a great opportunity to get introduced to the leaders of Region 15, and also our national president, Julius Cartwright, will be attending that regional conference as well. And I'm sure he would like to meet you.
I believe I met him and had dinner with him with a big group of folks in New York.
Okay.
But yeah, please pass along that information.
Okay, I certainly will. Well, Ryan, we have quite a few people on the line, but not a single question, both online and on the phone. And that just means you've been very thorough.
And, you nailed it.
That's right. You nailed it. Now, I only wish you had brought your guitar. You could just play a little ditty for us and to send us out. But we'll just do the regular Powers Now music as we close off the show. But next time we have you on, man, let's see if we can plug the guitar into the system and share a little bit of your talent. I appreciate. Go ahead.
I'm game.
All right. I appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and this has been a great topic. And folks, this call is being recorded and will be available on thepowersnow.com and on Blog Talk Radio within a few minutes after we end the call. And I want to encourage you to reach out to Mr. Hennessy. And if you have any questions or if you would like to state your value proposition, please do not hesitate to reach out to him. He is accessible and wants to meet agents who have a strong value proposition. Now, I do have one person. You know, isn't that typical? We're getting ready to end the show, and now finally the questions start coming. So we're going to take this one question, and then we're going to roll into some announcements and end our show. So let's see here. A caller, you're on the line. Who's calling?
Hello, this is Colleen Noble from Remax Gold in Morgan Hill. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks for calling, Colleen. What area are you calling from?
As you can tell from my accent, I'm from Texas.
Great.
No, I'm actually from England. So I'm actually calling Morgan Hill in California.
Okay,
I have
great.
Been an REO broker now since 2005, work with many, many different asset companies, really enjoy work in this business. And I always have kind of palpitations when I get my scorecard in, because so much is based on the scorecard. But there are a lot of things outside of our control. And I'm just wondering if this is taken into consideration in respect of delays in escrow, Sometimes we don't work with the best escrow companies, especially if they're not local, and also with lenders. And I just wondering if this is taken into consideration, unless every time we have a bad scorecard, we've got to write a thesis on, you know, what the issues we've been having.
No, absolutely. From our perspective, our scorecards are on a quarterly basis, which will hopefully take into consideration multiple properties or multiple tasks where an outliner isn't affecting anything too much negatively. But I actually, funny that you asked that question. About 2 weeks ago, I was on the phone with an agent in Oregon, and he was rather, Washington State, and he was rather concerned about his overall performance, because I know he's been a great top-performing agent, and if you look at his scorecard so far for this quarter, it was not that good because of one particular property that, again, at our client's will and at their non-willingness to reduce the property, it turned into an average days on market of I want to say it was just under, just over 200 days. So when we looked at his average days on market, it was very out of whack with the market. And same thing with his list price percentage of the sale price. But that's something that we talked about. I reviewed the property and made notation of, and that will not go into any negative remarks after reviewing the file and speaking with him. And that's something that I personally did with him. So,
okay, I kind of appreciate that feedback, because it's difficult at the moment with a lack of inventory. Of course, if you have four or five properties, it can be absorbed into your scorecard, a bad mark. But if you've only just got one or two, which, of course, we're looking at the moment with the, you know, the lack of assignments, then, of course, it makes a huge difference.
No, absolutely, and I feel like with an outsourcer's performance, you know, one or two outlining files doesn't really drastically affect our scorecard with a portfolio of sometimes several thousand assets that we're managing. But if an agent's managing just a handful, one property can really really hinder the overall grade. So that's something that we really look at the exceptions. And our scorecards are always available live on our website. So in reviewing that, if there is something that seems to be a little unique, we do have a vendor management department that you can always contact to express any concern or seek any clarification.
Okay, that's great. And just, sorry, one more last question. You know, most of the asset managers that I work with are tremendous people. I know the pressures that they are under, but sometimes you just get the odd one where the communication is not there. It can take 2 weeks to get any responses to offers. Addendums aren't signed in a timely manner. And, you know, the issue is it's very difficult, because if you escalate it up to a higher management, you feel that's going to adversely affect you, because, you know, of course, the asset manager is not very happy about that. And that's another concern that, you know, I wish I could take things up to a higher level to get things done. But then I think, well, what are the repercussions of doing that?
You know, from my standpoint, that's where, and I really sincerely hope you're not talking about Keystone, but...
No, I'm not talking about Keystone, no.
Oh, well, then that's a great question. From my standpoint, and I know Eric said it a couple times, and that I like to consider myself accessible, and I like for our managers and our senior managers to be readily accessible. And the reason for that is because if we're not providing a service to our business partners and our agents, then we cannot accomplish any sort of goal. And the obligation that an agent has to us is the same obligation that we have to that agent, and that's to provide solutions and opportunities and good communication to each other. So if there's an issue escalated to myself or some of our team leads and portfolio managers here, that is not taken into consideration negatively and will not negatively affect a grade. It's if the interest is strictly, hey, we need to find a solution here, or hey, we need to get approval, let's pass it on up the escalation and let's get that approval. Let's find a solution and let's move on to the next asset. We don't want to spend too much time on any one particular problem when it could have been avoided, you know, a week ago, if you will.
Sure. Well, I certainly appreciate it. I hear great things about Keystone. I certainly will be signing up for you guys. You know, you seem to. I certainly enjoy these talks, and you know, the power is now. I've just actually found out about this, so I've been listening to past broadcasts and found them very, very helpful. I'm hoping that I become a lot more busy in the next few months that I've got time to do with the REO assets, but I certainly appreciate you taking the time and to speak to us on this today.
Oh, thank you for your questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and I really love her accent, don't you, Ryan?
that's one of my values I can give to you for selling your assets is an English accent. Nobody ever distrusts a person who speaks from England. I'll put that on my resume. Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And go Kings.
Well, that was a great question, a great couple of questions, and a great way to end the show. We don't have any other questions. And, Ryan, again, I want to thank you for being on the Powers Now today and really sharing with us your experiences and really what it takes for agents to get noticed, to rise above the pack. It is it's a challenge that they all face if they want to be successful in this business. And as inventory continues to shrink, you know, there will be even more pressure on them to try to differentiate themselves in the marketplace so that they do get noticed. So I want to give you the final word of encouragement or recommendations to our agents as we close out the show. Any final comments?
Well, yeah, first of all, I just want to, you know, thank you, Eric, for inviting me and wanting to have me on the show. I think when we met in March, it was just a great friendship sparked right away. And I really feel that there's absolute opportunity for us all in this industry. I know file assignments, that can be a very frustrating process. It seems, again, like we're all chasing that same file or that same property. But again, that's where, you know, those that are hungriest and those that are creative are really going to find the success and find their way through a struggling summer, but into a prosperous end of the year here. And, you know, again, speaking on the same Powers Now, you know, concept, it's our opportunity now to really make adjustments, make sure we're in a great place and seize any opportunity you find available. I think it's, even though it's a struggling and unique time, I think there's plenty of opportunity and plenty of success stories that can be found to inspire us all.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ryan, and the power is now, and you're now part of the Power Is Now family. Thank you for being on the show today, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I want to encourage you all to go to ocrealtist.org, and check out the Orange County golf tournament that we'll be having on June 13th, and then the Region 15 conference on June 14th and 15th. And Ryan, if you happen to be in California, please join my foursome. It's on me, man. I would love to have you come and play golf with us and participate in the conference on June 14th and 15th. And so I'll be talking to you more about that offline. Folks, if you want to reach Ryan, his information is on the website, thepowerisnow.com. Just go there. You can listen to this call again. It's also on the flyer. Please join the Power Is Now Network. It's absolutely free. And listen to this call as well as other calls that may be that will be coming. In fact, next week, next Thursday, we'll be talking about short sales and a leaseback program with Jacob Aslodic. And I tell you, it's a hot new strategy for short sales, both in helping to resolve and get those properties sold or to create other opportunities. So look out for Jacob Swodek and his team to come to the Powers Now audience on next Thursday, same time, 10:30 to about 12 o'clock, and to learn more about short sales and leaseback programs. Also want to encourage you to listen on next Tuesday to the Communication Staircase Model, 7 types of different styles of communication. It's great information as a salesperson on dealing with the consumer, as a commercial agent working with vendors, and it's a great information to empower you to be more effective as a communicator. I really encourage you all to listen in to the Communication Staircase with T.S. Perkins, and that launches every Tuesday, starting next Tuesday, every Tuesday for 8 weeks. I promise you will not be disappointed. folks, this is a wrap of The Power Is Now. And again, I love doing this program. I appreciate every single person that tunes in every week to listen, all the great emails and the feedback I get from you. Please share the information. Link up with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Active Brain. I'm all over the internet. Send me an email. Let me know what you think. Join The Power Is Now and participate in the activities that are happening in the community. And we support everybody. I'm a member of NAREP, ARIA, and MAREP, all three minority trade associations, as well as NAR and CAR. And I support all organizations, and I want you, as a member of the real estate community, to...